ये शरीरा न तु तद्व्रजन्ति यन्यस्तदण्डो गतवैरो अभियाति मनस्विनो निर्जिता दिग्गजेन्द्रा ममेति सर्वे भुवि बद्धभयः मनस्विनो निर्जिता दिग्गजेन्द्रा ममेति सर्वे भुवि बद्धभयः
very great heroes, mental speculators, Nirjita Dik Gajendraha, who have conquered many other heroes as powerful as elephants. Mama.
Mama.
My.
My land.
My country.
My country.
My family.
My family.
My community.
My community.
My religion.
My religion.
Iti.
Thus.
Sarve.
All.
Great political. Social and religious leaders. Bhuvi.
In this world.
Baddha Vairaha. Who have created enmity amongst themselves.
Rithe.
In battle.
Shairam.
Fall dead on the ground. Na.
Not.
Tu.
But.
Tat. The abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rajanti.
Rajanti.
Approach.
Yat.
Which. Nyasta Dandaha. Asanyasi. Gata Vairaha. Who has no enmity throughout the whole world.
Abhiyati.
Attains that perfection. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
There were and are many political and social heroes who have conquered enemies of equal power. Yet, due to their ignorance in believing that the land is theirs, they fight one another and lay down their lives in battle. They are not able to take up the spiritual path accepted by those in the renounced order. Although they are big heroes and political leaders, they cannot take to the path of spiritual realization. Translation responsibly. There were and are
many political and social heroes
who have conquered enemies of equal power. Yet due to their ignorance,
in believing that the land is theirs,
they fight one another, and lay down their lives in battle. They are not able to take up the spiritual path. Accepted by those in the renounced order. Although they are big heroes. And political leaders. They cannot take to the path of spiritual realization. Purport. Big political leaders might be able to conquer equally powerful political enemies. But unfortunately, they cannot subdue their strong senses, the enemies that always accompany them. Not being able to conquer these nearby enemies, they simply try to conquer other enemies, and ultimately they die in the struggle for existence. They do not take to the path of spiritual realization or become sannyasis. Sometimes these big leaders take up the guise of a sannyasi and call themselves Mahatmas, but their only business is conquering their political enemies. because they spoil their lives with the illusion of this is my land and my family. They cannot progress spiritually and attain liberation from the clutches of Maya. Omagyanathivarandasya Gyanandanashilakaya Chakshurunmilitamena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama
So, a powerful person is one who can control their senses. And such a person is called a dhira, or a sober-minded person. Everyone in this world is more or less conditioned by their senses. We all are controlled by the indriyas. We have the Krishna says there's the six senses, including the mind. Right? The sense of sight, touch, smell, hearing, and tasting. But because of our desire to lord it over nature, we have landed ourselves in the material world. That is the cause for giving up our service unto Krishna. So we are part and parcel of Krishna, and our dharma is to render devotional service to the Lord. So because of this desire to control, to influence, etc., we are stuck here in the Bhavasagar, in the material world. And Krishna describes this mindset of the conditioned living entity in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter. He says, Ishvaraham aham bhogi, siddhaham balavan sukhi. So, you know, the typical materialist thinks, so much wealth I have today, and I will acquire more. Such and such is my enemy, and I will overcome them in due course of time. I am the Lord of everything, Siddhaham, Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi. I am the Lord of everything, and I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. So this is our mindset. Krishna is describing our material mindset, that we want to be the Lord of that we survey. In other words, we are attempting to take Krishna's position as the controller of everything. So in conditioned stage, we might think, okay, I'm not God, but at least I control something. And I have a certain sphere of influence. And everyone is trying to control in this world, whether we have a political position or not, whether we have a big role or not, but we all are trying to, we are trying to lord it over in our own way, depending on how much influence we have. At work, that's why powers of position are very attractive, and people are attracted to such positions. If I'm a treasurer, then I can control the activities of the kingdom, or of my organization, or of the temple, and I'm controlling the funds. So, and that way we are exerting our influence. At work, if someone is, you know, someone's in a managerial position, they're thinking, yes, it's they're doing it to serve, but also it is to exert their control and influence. And at home, the man who is maybe a big manager at work, they are controlled by their wife. They are controlled by the glances or by the words of their wife. So in this way, everyone is controlled. Everyone is controlled in this world. And everyone is trying to control. Everyone is trying to be the Lord of what we survey. And this is the material disease of... This is our material disease. Of course, we are conditioned. But the problem is, because we are trying to control, we are trying to be the Lord of material nature, others are also trying to be the Lord of material nature. We are not the only one in this world who are trying to become the gods of all that we survey. And because we have other people who have the same basic ambitions as ours, then there is clash. There is bound to be conflict, envy and war. Thanks, Guru. So there is bound to be that conflict because we are competing against others who have the same ambitions as us, as the same basic ambitions as us, right? So that's why there is clash. There is clash on a personal level. Then we see there is clash at a family level. And then there is clash at a society level, and then countries fight against each other. So it is the same material conditioning. It is not that people say, that the ordinary person just wants to live a happy life. It says these politicians who are causing all these problems. But that is just a manifestation of the conditioning of the common person. That is manifested in a collective manner, because the politicians are representing the people, and then they also have their own agenda on top of that. So there is bound to be conflict, and that's why there are so many wars in this world. And all of this, and as Prabhupada describes in a Bhagavad in, I think, 1520, there Prabhupada describes that our fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over nature, and then the second weakness we have is that we become attached to matter. So we become attached to that propensity to lord it over, and as a consequence become attached to matter. So Prabhupada says in the purport that while performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in Krishna consciousness, there are certain things to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is the weakness of heart. So the first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. As a consequence, one gives up one's transcendental learning service. And the second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity of lording it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. So the problems of material nature, existence, are due to these weaknesses of heart. So these are the weaknesses of heart that we all are suffering from. We have a desire to lord it over, and then we become attached. So because of this attachment, our senses drive us to fulfill our attachments. So we have this strong attachment, and we have these five senses, as I mentioned earlier, right? So we engage our senses to fulfill our attachments, and in this way everyone in the material world is struggling for existence. People are running around trying to fulfill their desires. The eye likes to see certain things. And the Srimad Bhagavatam also describes the consequence of being attached to the senses. The result of being attached to the senses is disastrous. It is very destructive on a material level, but also on a spiritual level. Being attached to the senses is very, very destructive. It destroys the soul, so to speak. So the example is given of for the sense of sight. The example is given of a moth. So the moth is attracted to light. So sometimes, like when I'm at night, I'm sitting in the study, and I leave the sometimes I leave the blinds open and the windows are also open. So but the table lamp is on, and then these moths, they come inside the room and they start to circulate around the table lamp. They get attracted by the light. And then after some time, you see, because of being attracted to the light, they get burned by that light. Or if you're sitting around a fire, maybe if you have a barbecue or something, you've lit a fire and you're sitting around the fire, and then you see all these flies are attracted by the fire, but then they burn due to the heat of the fire. So it is the attachment of the sense of sight, right? The sense of sight leads to their death. Then the example is given of the bee who is attracted by smell, right? So for a bee, their sense of smell is very strong, and they're attracted by the bees. Yes, they're attracted to the lotus flower. So they're attracted by the fragrance of the lotus flower. And what is the nature of a lotus flower? It opens and closes. So when the sun rises, the lotus flower opens, and at sunset, it closes. So the bee is intoxicated by the fragrance of the lotus flower, and it doesn't, due to the intoxication of the fragrance, it doesn't realize the sun's about to set. And it's not that the flower just closes suddenly, it's a gradual, it takes maybe 10 or 15 minutes or whatever. So it's a gradual process. But still, due to that strong intoxication and their attachment to smell, the bee is trapped, and then the bee dies. The bee is trapped and can't escape, and it dies. An example is given of the deer. The deer is attracted to sweet sounds, to music. So back in the day, they would hunt deer by playing sweet music, particularly the flute. The deer is attracted to the sound of the flute. So when the flute is playing, the deer is captivated by that sound, and it exposes itself. And then the hunter fires an arrow. So then Krishna plays his flute. The deers are stunned by the sound of Krishna's flute. They are totally stunned and in ecstasy. These days, the hunters use a rifle. They don't use. I haven't heard them using a flute. You know, they've taken a flute player. So they just use a high-powered rifle and aim and kill the deer. But before, they would use, maybe they brought someone who was good at playing the flute, or maybe they themselves played the flute, I don't know. The fish, we all know how fishing takes place. You throw a bait in the river on the body of water. But the fish is attracted to taste, its sense of taste, and it doesn't think that, oh, there's some free food hanging there, that there could be a trap there. The fish doesn't think like that. It just eats the food. Usually, one time I was walking along the Merri River, and I saw these very Vietnamese. They were digging the ground, and there were so many. They were digging out the worms, and they were storing the worms. What are they doing with the worms? And then I asked them, what are you doing with all these worms? Why are you taking out the worms? Are you going to eat them? Or they said, no, this is for bait. They use it as bait for fishing. Very unfortunate. And then, so the fish is attracted by the bait, and then it's caught by the hook, right? It gets entangled in the hook, and it is taken out. Yes, and sometimes they use nets also. In fact, these days modern fishing is so destructive that they use these big nets. And these big nets, they catch so many fish that are not even required. They call it bycatch. There's nothing called as sustainable fishing, because they catch so many fish, and in fact, most of the fish have disappeared in the oceans. There's very few fish left. It's becoming harder and harder for the fishermen to find fish. That tells you that the ocean is dying. Anyway, that's a different topic. And the elephant is attracted by the sense of touch. right? So the elephant, how do they capture an elephant? In India, they capture an elephant by digging a hole, covering that big hole with grass, and then they put a she elephant on the other side. So the male elephant is attracted by the female elephant, and it runs towards it, and then it falls in the ditch. So when the elephant falls in the ditch, so either they beat the elephant into submission, or they start to feed the elephant, and they try to make the elephant dependent. And they try to make the elephant dependent on the master, right? That's how they try to make the elephant submissive. So they start to feed the elephant over a period of time, and the elephant thinks, this person is my master because he's giving me food. And when the elephant is a bit submissive, he takes the elephant out. And then the elephant thinks, oh, this person rescued me. And that way it becomes submissive to their new master. So either they beat it or they trick it like that.
Starve
it. Yeah. So it's a very cruel process. But that's how the point is, the elephant, to fulfill the desire for touch, it falls into the ditch, and then it suffers. So in this way, we are also controlled by our five senses. So animals, one of their senses is very prominent, like the eagle. Their sense is very strong is sight. Like the dog can smell and hear very well. But in us humans, we are controlled by all the five senses. So all the five senses are dragging us in various directions. But we think we are very powerful. We think that we are very successful. We control everything. But in reality, we are controlled by the five senses. We are the servant of the five senses. And in that way, we are controlled. We are not the master. But under illusion, we are thinking we are a big, big master. I have a big position at work, or such and such, but we are simply a servant of the senses. And even like people in big positions, they also fall prey to their senses, all of them. Like right now we have the ex-attorney general, right? So it was alleged that he had raped his colleague 30 years ago. It's an allegation. So such a big person also, an attorney general is the highest officer for the law in the land, right? Such a person is also, the allegation is they're controlled by their senses. And there's so many examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam of great rulers. Even Hiranyakashipu was a great king. He had conquered the entire universe. He was in charge of the entire universe, the three worlds, not only one country. But he was not able to control his senses. He was always angry. His name Hiranyakashipu meant a bed and gold, right? So he was basically attracted by, he was in the pursuit of wealth, and then he was attracted by women. So Hiranyakashipu, though being a great person from a material estimation perspective, he was totally subservient to the senses. And from a spiritual perspective, someone who can control their senses is really a controller and is a powerful person. And that person develops a lot of strength. And people are attracted by such a person. A person whose character is very strong, who has a genuine character, that is very, very attractive. And they command a lot of respect, and they have a lot of influence and spiritual power. One who can control their senses. Everyone else is simply controlled by their senses, and they're just using others to fulfill their objectives. And such a life is a very miserable life in which we are controlled by our senses. So all of us are controlled by our senses, and we are being dragged by our senses. But if we analyze objectively, that is a very miserable life. We are being pushed, like we are being pushed to go here, go there, do this, do that. So here it's mentioned that even great political leaders, social heroes, they think I've conquered my enemies, but in reality, they are controlled by their senses, right? And there's this pastime of Rupa Goswami, which I've heard from senior Vaishnavas, that Rupa Goswami, as we know in his Dabir caste, aka Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami was Dabir caste, as people these days say, in my previous life. What they refer to is in this life, when they say previous life. So was he a prime minister or a finance minister?
He was a prime minister.
Prime minister. So
no, but prime minister was Shakyamuni. Dabir caste was
prime minister.
Finance minister.
So Rupa Goswami was the finance minister, such a great post. And Rupa Goswami, one time, he was being carried in a palanquin, like Maharaj Rahugana was. So Rupa Goswami was being carried in a palanquin in the dead of night, and he was going to see the king. The king, Nawab Hussain Shah, had summoned him. So he was going to see the king in the dead of the night. On a palanquin, being carried by palanquin carriers. And then as he was passing somebody's house, it was very quiet, he heard something. So this person who was inside the house, he heard someone going on a palanquin, and he said either it must be a prisoner, somebody is being taken as a prisoner, or it's a servant of the king going out there. And when Rupa Goswami heard this, he had this realization, though we know Rupa Goswami is a great acharya, out of his humility, he thought that I'm simply a prisoner, I'm simply a servant of the king, and I'm shackled in these golden chains. So a prisoner is shackled by iron chains, and here I am shackled by these golden chains, and I'm going at the order of the king. Right, I'm subservient, and though I'm thinking that I'm the controller. So out of his humility, he thought like that. He's a great Vaishnava. You should never think that he was controlled by senses. No way. And Rupa Goswami, he worked for Nawab Hussain Shah. We know that, right? So Rupa Goswami, the pastime was how he ended up working for Nawab Hussain Shah. One time, Nawab Hussain Shah, he was building a great tower. So he came to see the construction of the tower, and the stonemason who was working on the tower, he came and told Nawab Hussain Shah, "This is a great tower, it looks very beautiful, but I can make you something better." So this stonemason worked on that tower, and the king was infuriated. But this stonemason said, "Why didn't you do a good job on this tower? Why didn't you make it very nice?" So the Nawab Hussain Shah took the stonemason at the top, and he pushed him down, and he killed him. So he was thrown from such a height, and then he died. And then Nawab Hussain Shah, he summoned his secretary. So the secretary of state came. And he said, "Go to he said, go to Ramakeri. So he told go to Ramakeri, and as he was about to give him the instruction as to the purpose of going to Ramakeri, he got distracted by something else. Some messenger came and he got distracted. And then this, the Secretary of State thought, now, he's told me to go to Ramakeri, and if I just stand here with a blank face, I might be, you know, pushed over the tower.
Might be next.
I might be next. So he was scared of the king. And then he said, okay, so I'll just go to Ramakeri and then figure out what to do. So he went to Ramakeri clueless, and he was walking up and down, and there Rupa Goswami saw him, and he asked him, what are you doing here? Why are you just walking up and down without any purpose? He said, the king has sent me here to Ramakeri, but I don't know why he has sent me. And he said, okay, so what happened? And then the Secretary of State, he narrated to Rupa Goswami what took place. And he said, out of fear of being thrown over the tower, I came here. So Rupa Goswami said, the king actually wants, he sent you here to find a stonemason, a very good stonemason. So then he takes a very good stonemason with him back to the king. And Nawab Hussain Shah, he says, okay, he said, I got you this stonemason. He said, oh, how did you know I wanted a stonemason? He said, I knew. He said, no, you're not that smart. He said, tell me, who guided you? Who told you that? And he said, actually, this person by the name Rupa Goswami told me. He said, get him here. So Rupa Goswami was summoned. And then Nawab Hussain Shah also thought that if I get Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami here, in my kingdom I have a lot of Hindus. So from a political perspective, it's good to put a Hindu in a powerful position. So he thought of all these things, and he said, this is a very smart person. So then he gave him the post of Rupa Goswami, Finance Minister, Zabir Khas, and Sakar Malik, Sanatana Goswami as the Prime Minister in Nawab Hussain Shah's reign. So they were given these very powerful posts. And we know that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were always absorbed in the hearing and recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, their home was a replica of Vrindavan. So in their home, they had got a landscape done. That landscaping job was, they replicated Vrindavan. So Govardhan Hill, Radhakund, Shyamkund, everything was there. Like these guys also, you know, you can get a landscaper and tell them, they tell you, it will give you this tile, or give you maybe Balinese tile, or this tile, that tile. So they said, we want Vrindavan. That's what they had. And then they were always absorbed in the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Bhagavad Katha was taking place there. And they always, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami would write letters to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, asking to, you know, if maybe, I think their letters was, they always wrote letters to Mahaprabhu, but Mahaprabhu, they would never get a response. And one time they got a response, it was a cryptic response, and Mahaprabhu wrote that, if a wife has a lover other than a husband, the wife serves her husband very nicely, but always meditates on the lover. So then they understood that they have to keep on doing their duties as the finance minister and the prime minister till the right time comes. And then one time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to Ramakeri on his way to Vrindavan. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with these millions of followers. And Nawab Hussain Shah was a Muslim king. He had forbidden any Hindu performances in his state because he was a Muslim. He said only, I don't know if he had Sharia law or whatever. So he said only Muslim performances can take place, no Hindu performances. And then Mahaprabhu came doing open Sankirtan. Harinams were going on large scale with millions of people. So there was a huge uproar in the town. And then Namabu Senchai obviously knew about it. Then he sent Keshava Khan, who was a devotee, and he said, "Find out what's happening and tell me who's Mahaprabhu. Tell me who's this personality. We've got millions of people here." And then Keshava Khan, he came back with a report. And in the report, Keshava Khan thought and said, "If I disclose to him the identity of Mahaprabhu, he will want to harm Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he's a Muslim king." So he told Namabu Sinsha, "This is just a sannyasi who has come here to beg with his millions of followers." But the king was smart. He said, "Are you trying to tell me not to take him seriously? And this is just an ordinary person?" And Namabu Sinsha, he said that, "I'm a great king, I pay people so much money, they still don't do what I tell them to do. I'm paying them so much money, they still don't do what I ask them to do. And here these are sannyasi, and they all are volunteers, and they've dedicated their lives into it." And he said, this can be none other than Allah or your Rama or Krishna in the Vedas. So Nawab Hussain Shah, he had that realization. And then he summoned Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, and he asked them, "What is the identity of this person?" And they said, "He is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is the Supreme Lord, and all your wealth is his mercy." And the king was okay. But still, Sri Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami knew that the king is very cruel, and he can change his mind at any moment. Like Narad Muni, after counseling Kamsa, you know, Kamsa decided to free Vasudev and Devaki, but he knew that the Kamsa is a very demonic person. Anytime his mind can change. So like that, Nawab Hussain Shah, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami knew that his mind can change any moment. So they went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with a straw in their mouth and they offered their dandavats out of great humility, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to ask them to get up. They were prostrated for a long time. And they asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to, because he was on his way to Vrindavan. And they said, "Don't go with such a large number of followers. And leave Ramakeli because you're in harm's way." And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went back to Puri, I think, right? Or went to Vrindavan. He went back. He went back to Puri. Yeah, so he went back to Puri.
Took three attempts.
And then, but then Mahaprabhu asked Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami to retire. So now their time had come, and Rupa Goswami had to flee the kingdom of Namab Hussain Shah. So he went into exile. So he had a large amount of money, a lot of gold. He distributed half to the Vaishnavas. The other half, the remaining of the 50%, 25% he distributed to his family, and other he kept for personal emergency. And then he took off. So Nawab Hussain Shah was infuriated that Rupa Goswami has left his service. And then Sanatana Goswami stopped showing up for his job. So he was the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister was not doing his job. He was not showing up in the parliament. He was not showing up on Spring Street. So, or Parliament House, whatever was the equivalent back then in his kingdom. So he was not showing up. And then Nawab Hussain Shah was infuriated, and he personally went to their house to see what's going on. And the excuse was given, "I'm sick." It was a sicky excuse. Sicky. So he said, "How long can you be sick?" Whatever. And he went there and he barged in, opened the door, and then he saw them, there's Bhagavad Katha going on. And then he was furious, and he said, and Sanatana Goswami said, "Do whatever you want to do. I'm not going to work for you. I'm just going to, I've retired." And then Sanatana Goswami was thrown in prison. So when he was thrown in prison, he spoke to the janitor or the guard, whatever, and he said, look, can you let me out? I'll give you some, I have a gold coin, I have some gold, you take this. And he said, also, you let me go, take this gold, I want to go to Makkah for pilgrimage. And the jailkeeper, he was a Muslim, he said, okay, yeah, Makkah, you want to go to Makkah, right, go then. But he actually wanted the money, and you know, so he got his bribe, and Sanatana Goswami was released. And then, being on the bus, he escaped into Vrindavan, and they met Mahaprabhu at Varanasi. Yeah, so they met Mahaprabhu at Varanasi, and then they were instructed by the Lord over there. So Rupa Goswami had that realization that I am controlled by this king, though, you know, Rupa Goswami is a great saint. In this way, we all are controlled by our senses, though we are thinking that we are the master, but we are controlled. And here, here in the verse, we are being encouraged to follow the path of the sannyasis, of the renounced order. Right? So, we are encouraged to follow the path of the sannyasis. So, that doesn't mean take sannyas. So, a sannyasi is one who is in the highest social order. They renounce their family and their wealth, their prestige, everything. And they are engaged in the service of the Lord. So, there's two types of sannyasis. There's the impersonal sannyasi, and then there is the personal sannyasi, the Vaishnava sannyasi, and the impersonal sannyasi, the Ekadandi and the Tridandi. So sannyas means one-pointed focus. That's what sannyas means. Focus on the Supreme, one-pointed focus, nothing else. So that's what is being encouraged, that we have to follow the path of the sannyasi. So now most of us are grihasthas. I think everyone in this room is, I can see all that. I can't see any brahmacharis or sannyasis. There's kids and families, so we all are, or some single men. We all are more or less in the householder ashram. And so for us, what does sannyas mean? For us, sannyas means one-pointed attention unto the service of Krishna. That's what is sannyas. And Krishna talks in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as is obligated is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. So our Swadharma, our real dharma is to render service to Krishna, right? So when we engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha, Rishikena, so Krishna is Rishikesh, Krishna is the master of the senses. So all our senses are under the control of the Supreme Lord. Everything belongs to Krishna. All our wealth, our talents, our body, our mind, our words, our possessions, everything is Krishna's energy. And when it is engaged, when our senses are engaged in Krishna's service, in the service of the master of the senses, then our senses get purified. And in that way, we don't fall prey to the senses. And in that way, we purify our attachments. So we all have various attachments, right? All of us have attachments. So here it's mentioned that political and social heroes. So we are also trying to be, you know, politically and socially powerful in our own way. We are also looking for social acceptance. We work very hard, 5 days a week or 7 days a week, in order to, for that paycheck, in order to have a house, right, have a car, So not any ordinary house, but a nice house, in a nice, in a respectable suburb, and a respectable car. So all that we are doing for social acceptance. Right? So we are doing these things to be socially accepted, to be maybe politically accepted, to be politically powerful. We are aspiring for so many things. But if we engage our possessions in Krishna's service, in the service of the master of the senses, then they get purified. And slowly, slowly, our attachments get purified. So we all have attachments, but we have to purify them. And that's what sannyas is about. So we can be in the household of life, we can be in the household of ashram, but if we engage our possessions in the service of Krishna, then they get, slowly we get purified, slowly, quickly, depending on the application. We get purified. So in practical terms, that means if we are making some money through a business or a job, to use that money in various spiritual Krishna conscious activities. So either you can start your own, like some devotees, they have bhakti viksha programs. So they are dovetailing the attachment of their house, that nice house, by using it in Krishna service. Right? They're opening their space to let other people in, to give them an opportunity to hear. And using their wealth to facilitate that program. And also to facilitate the spread of the Krishna consciousness movement by donating to various causes. So like this temple is run. A temple requires money and manpower. So we give our time, we give our energy by doing some service. And then we can give our wealth to the temple, or we can give to various other projects that are taking place. So what we are inspired by, we donate to those causes. Or you can start your own project, your own program. So in this way, we dovetail we engage our wealth in Krishna's service, and that way we practically demonstrate that everything belongs to Krishna by this practical engagement in Krishna's service. So that is the Vaishnava way of, that is a Vaishnava sannyasi. So the Vaishnava way of purifying our senses is to engage in Krishna's service. And the impersonal way of sannyas is to detach oneself from matter artificially. That's what they do. So the Mayavadi and impersonalist sannyasis, they simply engage in the study of Vedanta. So Vedanta is the main literature. So there's Advaita Vedanta, there's different Vedantas, different Acharyas have given, all of the Acharyas, main Acharyas, have given a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Like Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya also, right? So everyone has given.
Vidyabhushan.
Yes. So the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra is the Srimad Bhagavatam by the author of the Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadeva. So the impersonalist sannyasis, they generally engage in the study of the Vedanta and they refrain from all other activities. But that study is very dry. Even study of the Vedas that is devoid of glorification of Krishna is dry. And Vyasadeva, when he compiled all the Vedas, he was despondent. So Vyasadeva, out of his compassion, he foresaw the conditions of Kali Yuga, and he compiled the four Vedas. Vyasadeva, then he compiled the Mahabharata for the Sri Vaishyas and Dvijabandhus, right? He compiled the Mahabharata. He compiled the Vedanta Sutra, and after all that, he divided the one Veda into four. After all that, he was not satisfied, he was despondent. And Narad Muni, he pointed out the cause of his despondency, which was insufficient glorification of the Lord. then Vyasadeva, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, which contains abundant glorification of Krishna. And in all the Puranas he compiled, there wasn't sufficient glorification of Krishna. There was some glorification, but not sufficient. So even Vyasadeva was despondent, what to speak of others. So the impersonalist fame of sannyas is to refrain from material activities. And sometimes people, when they get frustrated in material life, and all of us get frustrated, in due course, we will get frustrated. But when people get frustrated, what do they say? For them spirituality means not to do anything. It's to basically more or less renounce. And this is people's conception of spirituality. Right? They think, I'm coming. Spirituality means you just sit and do meditation. Meditate on the ingoing, outgoing, go for a Vipassana retreat. And do some meditation. Just focus on the candle. This is the meditation for people. But after a Vipassana retreat, what happens? For 1 week or 10 days, in the West, the Vipassana retreat is very popular. So they'll go 10 days, not talk to each other, take a mana breath, and then after that, back to business as usual. BAU. That's the business as usual. So, again, talking all sorts of nonsense and eating all sorts of nonsense food. They come back to their usual activities because it is not possible to refrain the senses. And Krishna talks about that in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says that you cannot control your senses artificially. You need to have a higher taste. And in that way, you can control the senses. So, Krishna consciousness means to engage in the higher taste, in the activities of the higher taste. So for us, we all are transcendentalists, we all are yogis. And for us, yoga means to practically engage our senses in active devotional service. That is yoga for us. That is bhakti yoga. Not simply doing some asanas and some mindfulness or some meditation. It is to practically engage your senses all day in service. So by chanting the holy names in the morning, chanting the Maha Mantra, 16 rounds, and then doing some service. Most of us are working, so we are working 40 hours a week or so. Then one might think, how is that service if I'm going to work? If I'm going to an office, and there's no talk of anything spiritual. There's no talk of Krishna. All they're talking about is how to further the objectives of that organization. And that is your soul, samadhi, and meditation. All day. You have to be absorbed and show you're in samadhi. Otherwise you won't get hired. Or otherwise you won't be retained, right? You have to show I'm fully absorbed in your mission. And they want that level of surrender. So one might think that, how is that Krishna conscious? How is that Krishna conscious? But if we go to work to be able to live a Krishna conscious lifestyle, and also to be able to give it to others by using those resources, then that activity becomes spiritualized. Then it has a spiritual focus. Otherwise it is very mundane. It's not exciting, but then at least it becomes maybe tolerable. And by doing that, by doing these practical activities of chanting, of going to work, and then taking up some service in the temple, or helping with some preaching activity, either doing it yourself or contributing to it in one way or the other. And in that way we purify our senses. We are able to control our senses and purify our various attachments that we have. And slowly, slowly we get purified and we become Krishna conscious. So I'll leave it there. Do you have any questions? Yes, Madhuri.
I have a question that, like you said, we should use our possession and like material possession and like how to spread for Krishna service. So, as we are already programmed, like our mind is programmed, we use it for certain purposes. So, what percentage of possessions we should start engaging in Krishna service and to what level should we take it so that we achieve sannyas being in the household?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. So, to what degree of our possessions should be engaged in Krishna service? Well, there's no set answer. It just depends on one's individual circumstances. I mean, the ideal I'm talking about is what Rupa Goswami said, 50% of your earnings are dedicated to spiritual activities. Now, you know, that might not be practical for everyone in today's context. So, you just have to see according to one's own circumstances. Everyone earns different amounts of money, right? And we also attach to it, on top of it. We are attached to how much we want to give to Krishna. We want to give as little as possible and get as most, in return get the most amount of blessings. So we have that conditioning. But you have to just see what you're inspired by, you know, what project you're inspired by, and then donate to the best of your ability, while also taking into account your personal circumstances. And everyone's circumstances are different. Today you might be able to donate this much, tomorrow you can give more. So you have to balance your life as well. You need to be able to put food on the table, so to speak, right? You have a mortgage to pay. Maybe kids have to go to school. They have to pay for their education. And after that, you just have maybe a little bit left. And maybe if you can't donate, then donate your time. But if you have money to donate, then yeah, we should donate it to the temple and maybe other causes, what you're inspired by. But it's different for everyone. So you have to maturely look at it also. That's the general answer. I can't go into specifics because your situation will be different to anyone else. I hope that answers it. Yes, please.
You want to tell us about Daman Chacharya,
Yeah, so Ramanujacharya is one of the great acharyas.
Thank you.
Sorry? Hare Krishna. Yeah. So he's one of the great acharyas coming in the disciplic succession. And he came to gradually bring people back to Krishna consciousness. So he was one of the acharyas who came in the line of acharyas to have that gradual shift to Krishna consciousness. So when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings were very prominent, but over time the teachings got corrupted and lost. And then Lord Buddha came because the Vedas were being exploited for mundane purposes, and Lord Buddha, he rejected the Vedas. And after Lord Buddha, Shankaracharya came, right? So he said, okay, we accept the Vedas, but then he established the monism, right? Impersonalism. And then Madhvacharya came, who Madhvacharya's philosophy was Vishishta Advaita, which is more or less that.
No, that's Ramanujacharya.
Yeah, what was Madhvacharya's?
Vaita Vishishta.
Yes, and then
he came second, after
Ramanujacharya. He came after Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya came after Ramanujacharya. So, yeah, Ramanujacharya came after
Shankaracharya.
So, Ramanujacharya My understanding is he established we are the spirit soul, and then there is the supreme Lord. Am I correct?
Qualified monism.
Qualified monism. So that was his main contribution, and then gradually we come to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
You mentioned about the different senses and how the elephant is seeking touch, and we are trapped with all the senses. So there is one very nice verse by Uddhavji in the 11th canto. Tvayo bhukta sri gandha vaso alankara charchita utchishta bhojino dasasta maya jayevahi. So Uddhavji is saying that by us enjoying what you have enjoyed already, your sri, your garden, the incense that has been offered to you, vaso, the clothes that have been offered to you, alankar, ornaments that have been offered to you, and the prasadam, the food that has been offered to you. By us enjoying that, uchishka bhojino dasas, your servants, jayemahi, tagamaya jayemahi, they win over your maya. So all the senses can be won over by us in prasad buddhi, enjoying what Krishna has already enjoyed.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Guru. That's a question. Yes.
My question is that you saying that we should control our senses. So, but we see great yogis control their senses, and in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends us not to do that yoga that they're doing. He recommends us to do bhakti yoga. Why is it that so?
Why is Krishna recommending to perform bhakti yoga, not engage in work like what the yogis do?
Yeah.
Okay. Because bhakti yoga is easy to do. That's why.
Very good.
So yoga is very difficult. You have to sit cross-legged long time, and it's very difficult, isn't it, to sit still. So bhakti yoga, Krishna says, it's easy. And you can serve me directly. That's why Krishna recommends bhakti yoga. So yoga is indirect. You know, a yogi is trying to see Paramatma in the heart, whereas in bhakti yoga one can see Krishna directly. And by doing the simple activities of eating prasadam, you like prasadam, right? But by eating prasadam, by playing in the temple, so with your friends, by chanting, coming to class like you're coming, in this way one can go back to Godhead. So it's very easy. That's why Krishna recommends this. And the chance of fall down is also less. Whereas in that, the chance of fall down is very high, because one is artificially engaged. One wants to eat nice prasadam, one wants to eat nice food, but they are not eating. So what happens on a fast day? Like when you're trying not to eat.
They get tempted to eat.
You get tempted to eat, right? Imagine you're doing that all the time. So imagine you're just eating nuts and maybe some fruits all the time. You're on a raw diet all the time. What will happen?
I'll get tempted to eat other stuff.
Yes. And first you get tempted, then you eat it. So this is what happens to yogis. The yogis think I'll be a brahmachari or sannyasi when they're not meant to be. And then they do that, and they just, there's no fun, it's just boring. And then they come back to material activities. So that's why Krishna doesn't recommend that. He says, do the fun part, and in which you can go back to Godhead. Yeah, it's not boring and it's fun. Haribo. Yes.
What if someone gets attached to eating prasad, coming to the temple for prasad? So what happens to them?
someone gets attached to prasadam, then that's a good thing. So that way, and you said if they come to a temple to eat prasadam, Melbourne temple is Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. It's known in the ISKCON world as a major prasadam temple, amongst other things. So, well, the good thing is they keep coming regularly and then get the association of devotees. When they come to temple, then somebody will approach them in due course of time. Prabhu or Mr. or Mrs., we are doing this program, would you like to join us? And then they might go to some program and hear. And if they come to temple, they'll see the deities go to Aarti. In that they get purified. And if we get addicted to prasadam, that's a good thing, but you also for devotees, you have to be careful also. You can destroy your health with prasadam also. So, you have to eat simply. I know a lot of devotees who have health problems because of eating very often prasadam. So, yes, eating prasadam is nice, but you have to limit what type of prasadam you eat also. Because if you eat opulent prasadam all the time, your body is going to break down in due course of time. And if you're not exercising enough, you're not burning it out, and then it's going to break down. So, yes, we have to eat prasadam in the beginning. You have to, it's a good start to eat prasadam and be addicted to it. But then over time, you have to, as become mature, even in prasadam, you have to limit what you eat. can you eat healthy prasadam? And then every now and then some, a feast. If you're eating a feast every day, like Mahaprasadam, it's just a matter of time you get sick. And then the service will stop also. Then chanting the rounds becomes difficult. You have cholesterol problems or sugar problems or baby problems. Then everything becomes difficult. The budget becomes difficult.
Just one more question. Like engaging our senses in Krishna's service, is that different from getting attached to the spiritual activities? Engaging and getting attached?
Yes, and so our nature is to be attached. By nature we'll be attached, so it is just a question of dovetailing the attachment. So yes, we want to be attached to our service. That is a good thing. And in the higher stages of devotional service, there is also attachment, which leads to prema, you know, eventually. So attachment is a good thing. We have to be, we should be attached to the garlands we are making, or that bhoga offering we are doing, or the aarti we are doing, or the programs we are doing in our home. That is a very good sign, and that is a sign of progress. If you're not attached, then we have a problem. We have a spiritual problem. So it's a sign of progress, being attached.
Prabhu, I read somewhere that don't try seeing Krishna, try serving Krishna. What does that exactly mean? Would you please explain it to us?
Yeah, so that means by serving Krishna, we see Krishna. Like you cannot, you don't go and say, I want to see Skomo. Can you get audience of Skomo? Scott Morrison. Or Dan Andrews. Can you say I want to sing? No, you know, most likely you're not singing. Even if you go to his secretary, even if you send him an email, his email is publicly available, you're not going to get a response. You might get, but you're not going to get his audience. So the only way to see him is to do something. Either something good or bad. Either you do something really stupid and then you see them, or you do something very good. The stupid thing will probably end up in jail, and then you might see him or you might hear from him, but or you do something really, really remarkable and attract the attention, right? Like this bushfires that happened, there was this group, the Sikh United Front, whatever they call it. They did a lot of food distribution in the bushfire affected zones, and they did large scale, and they came to everyone's attention. There was a whole article in the AHN Daniel Andrews also, I mean, personally thanked him. In Skomo also spoke about him. So all these people who were unknown, they became, you know, heroes. So because they did something remarkable. So in this way, when we engage in Krishna service nicely, then we attract the Lord's attention, and then in due course we see Krishna. Then Krishna takes some interest in us and notices us for our tiny contribution, because we are doing something to serve Him. And the best thing to do is to spread His glories. Either do it yourself or help people who are doing it. In one way, be connected. And effectively, that's what the temple is also doing, right? So even if you're doing service at the temple, you're supporting that broader mission of spreading the glories. Okay, thank you everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.